Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we discuss the relentless pursuit of ROI. Yes, that's right, return on investment and return on inflation. We have a changing future with monetary policy and fiscal policy the way it is, and we need to prepare for it as investors by structuring our transactions differently, and we will talk about that on this episode and future episodes, of course. So we will be back with a fantastic interview for you and a guest today in just less than 60 seconds. Stay tuned.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn more about investing in real estate in different markets, there's a show for that. If you want to learn 17 ways rich people think and act differently, there's a show for that. If you want to know how to get paid to borrow, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know why Amsterdam doesn't take dollars or why pools are for fools, there are even shows for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
Welcome to Creating Wealth. This is Jason Hartman. We have a good show for you today. Two guests on the show. Number one, we have Tolliver Morris, who is talking about commercial real estate. Let's get a little introduction to commercial real estate that I think you'll like. We'll talk about different product types in the commercial real estate market and give you some thoughts on what is the easiest to manage and deal with versus what is the most difficult and most complex. And we'll be doing a lot more on commercial real estate in future podcasts, so please stay tuned for those. This is just a little sort of mini introduction to it. And then second, we will have our very own Dave Toombs, former client, well, I guess still a client, but he came to us as a client a couple of years ago in one of our seminars and started investing with us. And he'll talk about his very skeptical wife, how it all worked, and how his experiences have been going investing. So you'll hear some real-world stories from a veteran investor when Dave talks about that. I think you'll enjoy it, and let's get into it. Thanks for joining us today. I'm here with Tolliver Morris, and we are here to talk for the first time ever on our podcast about commercial real estate investing and the new Platinum Properties Investor Network Commercial Division. Welcome, Tolliver.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you here. Tell our listeners, why should they consider investing in commercial real estate?
Well, several reasons. The first is diversification of risk. We've got multiple asset classes you can buy into in terms of commercial real estate as well as other investments, but commercial real estate gives you different types of places to invest.
Okay, super. And the other thing I really like about it is the larger deal size and the economy of scale, because I'd have to say, Tolliver, if there's one flaw with our system for investing, which is buy shelter, which everybody on earth needs a place to live, which is what I love about residential real estate, even if it's small multi-units, fourplexes, et cetera. But the problem is, if you want to go big and really build an empire, when you get to 30, 40 houses, it really does become a bear to manage. So can you maybe speak a little bit to the economy of scale aspect and the larger deal size, and then talk about the types of properties?
Yeah. The people that got wealthy making money in commercial real estate didn't necessarily do it at one house at a time. They invested in commercial real estate and invested in larger properties, whether they be apartments or office or retail, and we'll talk about the different types here in a second. But you can buy anything from $500,000 up to $500 million in commercial real estate and anything in between. And so there's lots of ranges that you can talk about in terms of investment size.
Excellent. Do you have a favorite type of commercial property? Well, what types are there first? Just outline the different choices available.
Well, there's residential multifamily, which would be apartment homes. Anything from a fiveplex and up is usually thought of as multifamily.
Yeah, so
residential.
So just for listeners that may not know this, 1 to 4 units is thought of as residential, and 1 to 4 units has different financing issues, and we'll talk about financing in a moment.
Right.
Then when you get over 4 units.
Right.
So multifamily and apartments.
In residential. And then you've got retail, which would be your Best Buys of the world and any type of strip retail or even single, triple net retail from Jack in the Boxes to whatever, anything you go and kind of buy stuff that's typically found on the corners. Those are retail. Then you've got...
So on that, you know, you're talking about there's strip centers, there are single tenant deals like a Dollar General store, a Jack in the Box, a McDonald's. I think McDonald's actually owns all their real estate,
though.
Yeah,
correct.
They're a big real estate company,
right.
Actually.
Right.
So a bad example on that one. But with those... With those single-tenant type properties, like, who builds the building? Do you just own the pad as the landlord and the investor, or do you build the building and then lease the building to one person or one tenant for, you know, 20 years?
It can be done a bunch of different ways, but typically what happens is a developer comes in with a piece of property and develops a piece of property with either a specific use for a tenant or a multi-tenant site and then leases the space to a Starbucks or some of those types of tenants and then will sell it off as a triple net investment lease property.
Okay. Excellent, excellent. So that covers the retail gamut. Did we
right.
cover all the retail stuff?
We did.
Okay, next one.
Next one would be office, and office would be anything from low-rise office space to high-rise office space and everything in between. And office is kind of what it sounds like. It's where you put insurance companies, law firms, accounting firms, all that kind of stuff goes into office space. Then you've got industrial, and that is several different types. You've got R&D industrial, you've got manufacturing industrial, you've got shipping and receiving industrial. So you've got all sorts of different types of uses for industrial property, and typically there's an office component in the front and there's warehouses and manufacturing in the back.
And, like, what's the allocation of industrial? I know that you've been helping us with our new office, and we're moving soon, and I'm really excited about that. When you think of industrial, some of the listeners might be thinking really large, but a lot of these are just little tiny places that are 1,200, 1,500 square feet, right?
Right. Yeah, some of the industrial properties can be, you know, a small space that has, or a small building that has multiple spaces leased to individual tenants, and lots of times those are easy to both manage and easy to get rented, and they have low costs on the front end of those. So great little investment opportunities. The other type might be a 10,000 square foot industrial building that's a single lease triple net industrial building. Those can also be an interesting investment vehicle.
So what types of businesses do you have in here, like printer? You might have mailing service.
Right. You can have auto uses. You can have mailing services. You can have contractors. You can have even architects sometimes going to industrial if they have kind of a back office assembly area. So any type of shipping, distribution, the cleaner uses are typically better for the small investor because you don't have to deal with any toxic issues. So I would typically stay away
environmental
from
environmental stuff, yeah.
And the environmentally impacted stuff like auto uses and some of those things that would use toxins in their particular facilities.
Okay, good point. On this industrial subject, Oliver, I once talked to a commercial broker who was looking for a space here in Orange County for a client, and they just were leasing it, but they needed an industrial space, a fairly small one, and they said, well, they needed the ceilings to be really high because they made satellites. And I thought, well, that's an interesting tenant, you know,
right.
that actually builds satellites
right.
that go into outer space.
So. Right. It's amazing what you find in these little industrial parks.
Yeah. And again, in places like the People's Republic of California, I like to joke about that, but it's somewhat true. You have a lot of restrictions against manufacturing, and it's hard to do business here because there are tough environmental regulations and a lot of tough regulations like that. But in different parts of the country, a lot of the government agencies are much easier and more friendly
right.
to these types of businesses.
Right. So you have big industrial all over the country and
yeah.
small multi-tenant industrial that services and fills the needs for those bigger industrial groups.
Yeah, so that's something an investor would want to consider is what is the regulatory climate like for the tenant, right?
Right.
In other words, what's my market going to be for tenants?
Right.
Can the tenants do their thing here, or is it difficult to do their thing here?
Right.
So good point. Okay, and what's the next one?
The next one would be medical. medical is one of those that's emerging.
Aging population.
Yeah. And so to the degree that you can own medical buildings and lease them to doctors or eye scanning or hair transplant or any types of different types of groups, those are increasing in number in terms of the need.
With medical, for example, I remember the last building we leased, we had an office there, just traditional office, and then across the hall from us was a cosmetic surgeon. And so I remember when they moved in after us, they built like a big diesel generator outside, and it was like they had to have all these parking requirements. And what are some of the issues? Medical is lucrative for the landlord, but it's also complicated and expensive to build it out, right?
Right. It's very challenging to go into new medical that has not been tenanted because a lot of the improvements are very specific to the companies that move into those buildings. And the improvements can be very costly, just as you said. So the lower cost medical would be dentistry is not that expensive to put in, and they can actually go into some types of office buildings as well. Chiropractic,
right.
You know, some of those types of groups that are not, again, dealing with toxics. We talked about that with the industrial.
Right.
You don't necessarily want to be in the toxic realm
right.
with the medical facilities, unless you're a big operator and you know how to deal with that.
Yeah. So you got to know what you're doing.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, good. And what else?
And the last thing is mini storage. It's one of those kind of little side ones that can be pretty lucrative, and it's typically fairly easy. You've typically got somebody who's either on site or staffed locally to deal with the mini storage units, but once they're up and running, once they're fairly full, they're pretty much a cash cow. They do great.
Isn't that great? Because in mini storage, you know, I have two storage units myself, and they raise my rent so aggressively all the time. It's like clockwork. The rent goes up, but it's such a hassle to move. Like, I never go to these things, and I've just got old boxes and stuff in there. I don't think people move because it's not like enough money for them to move out.
Right.
There's not enough motivation.
Well, many times these mini storages are filled with items that have less value than the monthly rent of the mini storage.
It's the eBay world we live
right.
in, right?
Yeah. Indeed.
On the mini storage, it's kind of interesting because I know that one of the big trends there is to have automated mini storage. And I don't know how plausible that really is. You know, a mini storage is like running a business,
right.
you know, at least at first. So at first you might buy it and it might be pre-leased where it's an existing business.
Right.
And we have someone like living on site. Now, I guess there's all different permutations.
Right. There are companies that manage multiple mini storages and they'll do it from off-site locations. And
like you contract with them.
Correct.
Right? And let them run your property.
Correct.
Pretty much. Okay.
The automated mini storage is a very brand new thing that's not been tested. We don't really know how that's going to work and permeate into the market and whether that's going to be successful next to the kind of people-assisted mini storage.
Yeah. Good. Good point. So a lot to consider here, and we'll get future podcasts on each of these subjects and drill down more, of course, as we're working more with the commercial properties and get specific on each particular product type later. What about mobile home parks? That's
well,
one
mobile home
mention.
Parks is kind of in the category of residential multifamily. The great news about mobile home parks is the returns can be fabulous. The challenge with mobile home parks is the caliber of the tenancy typically is challenging to deal with. There's a lot of turnover, and it's something you have to work at.
Yeah, and this again, because I've looked at a lot of mobile home park investments myself that I wanted to do personally, and one of the things I found is that, again, it's a business. It's like you're running a business,
right.
you know, rather than just a real estate investment.
Right.
Whereas sometimes we'll have a client, occasionally, not very often, that'll complain that they got to talk to their property manager. That's nothing. I mean, some of these things, you're really running a real business.
You're running it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Mobile home park people are, some of them, salt of the earth and great people, but you do have an element typically in a mobile home park that they're tough to get the rent out of. A lot of mobile home parks, frankly, are set up on automatic draws out of people's paychecks.
Wow.
So those are the ones that are fairly successful.
Yeah, and there's different issues there. One of the advisors I was talking to was saying what you've got to do nowadays really to make it work is you got to buy the mobile homes, put them on the lots, and then lease them out, at least the lots, the land,
right.
and then sell the mobile home to someone and carry the paper yourself.
Right.
They said that was like the ultimate way to do it, and I thought, oh, that's very complicated. But I think it's profitable. It's just you got to understand there's a time commitment to this stuff.
Right.
It just depends how active you want to be versus how passive
but
you
want to be. But those can be fabulous returns if you ever want to take a look at a mobile home park. They can be some of the best returns out there.
Excellent. We'll be back in just a minute.
Now you can get Jason's Creating Wealth in Today's Economy home study course. All the knowledge and education revealed in a 9-hour day of the Creating Wealth Bootcamp, created in a home study course for you to dive into at your convenience. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com.
Talk to us, Tolliver, about who typically invests in commercial real estate.
Well, in the big properties, whether they be commercial or industrial or even residential multifamily, you get lots of pension funds, insurance companies, endowments, institutional buyers who will buy these gigantic portfolios of properties or even large asset single properties. You also get public companies that come in, the REITs, which are publicly traded on Wall Street. And we, you know, there's the average individual can buy shares in REITs, and so they can own commercial real estate through an REIT, which is a real estate investment trust.
Oh, good. That's what I wanted to say. Yeah. And then there are private companies too, right?
Yeah. Private companies, a good example would be the Irvine Company here in Newport Beach, who owns a lot of property and is a privately held company.
And part of the Irvine Company used to be a public REIT.
Correct.
But then Donald Bren
bought it all back.
Yeah,
I used to own some apartment communities of Irvine Company. They bought my stock back. And then you have individuals and family trusts, and they typically own the smaller commercial real estate. And so there's kind of an opportunity to buy commercial real estate that's in this tweener place, that's kind of not too small and not too big, that's perfect for the individual investor.
Right. And I think that's a very important point you make, which we will talk about on future podcasts too,
right,
which is what is the right deal size to be looking for? And that's a long discussion, I know. So, but it's a good point you bring up. How can you invest in commercial real estate?
Well, again, we talked a little bit about the REITs, the real estate investment trust. You can invest that way, which they're public companies. You can buy shares in REITs and they hold property. But you are definitely in a deficit position because you're totally subordinate to their whims and what they want to do and how they want to buy property and how they want to manage and operate property.
And the big salaries they pay themselves.
Absolutely.
And the taking the money off the top and the acquisition fees, the disposition fees, the management fees. And that's why I like being a direct investor.
Right.
And this one applies to the next one you're going to say, too. What's the next
one? Which is limited partnerships. And limited partnerships are where somebody comes in as a developer or investor or an accumulator of money and will run and manage a particular investment, and you buy a fractional percentage of that. And again, you don't have control, typically decent returns if the property does well, but you don't have control. And then you can invest individually, which I know is what you're most interested in, Jason.
Be a direct investor.
Right.
Be an individual investor. Yeah, absolutely.
In that case, you control everything that happens with the property. You make the decisions as to what happens going forward in the future, when you sell, whether you sell, how the rents increase.
How you want to finance it.
Correct.
How do you like your property manager? If you don't like them, get rid of them, get a new one.
Right.
So you're in control.
You get all the upside if you control individually.
Yeah, because no one's taking the profits off the top, right?
Correct.
Yeah, good.
Correct.
And last one.
And the last one, you can own your own business and buy property. So if you're a business owner and you want to move into property, you buy property. Typically, people buy property still individually and lease it back to their business. But you can get special financing if you're trying to buy business property, which is called SBA financing.
Yeah, Small Business Administration loans. And if you occupy like a certain percentage of the building or all of it.
50% of the building or more, then you get special 504 SBA financing, which is typically 10% down and great rates.
The one thing, though, I do want to say about doing it with your own business, notwithstanding the financing, which could be a very good deal, is that I usually find with a lot of my friends in like Young Entrepreneurs Organization who have their own business, and they it's a common thing that I hear for them to say, well, we just bought our own building last year, or we want to buy our own building. And I find that to be largely a mistake. And let me tell you why. It's because people are dictating that they want to own the building just because they happen to have a business versus evaluating the investment on its own merits.
Right.
And then running their business on its own merit based on what they can get. So you could be trapped into buying a building just because you want to stick your business in there, but it may be a better deal to rent.
Right.
Just for example, like in California right now, residentially, it's a better deal to rent than own.
Right.
For your place to live. And now that will change as time goes on, and it has been better to own in the past, certainly, but that's something to consider.
Yeah, I would agree completely. And I've seen a lot of companies get into trouble, especially companies that have a lot of fluidity in terms of size and change quite a bit. They get stuck in properties that don't fit their needs anymore, and it dictates their business decisions versus their making good real estate decisions.
Good stuff. Okay, Tolliver, we've been going for a while here, and I know I want to talk to you about several other things. So let's just save it for the next podcast. We'll have you back. We'll talk about lending. We'll talk about what the market is like for commercial real estate today around the country, and we'll talk about how to find the best commercial real estate opportunities. So anything in closing for this segment?
I think commercial real estate got a lot of opportunity out there, and I'd love to help some people with commercial real estate.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for joining us today, and we will have you back on a future podcast, maybe the next one or the one after that, and we'll talk about those other three major areas. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I'd like to introduce you to a new member of the Platinum team, and it is a former client who kind of comes with a funny story. This is Dave Toombs. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Jason.
Great to have you here today. But Dave comes with kind of a funny story before we talk to him about real estate investing and his experience and his inspiration for investing in real estate. I think you'll find interesting. He came to our seminar a couple of years ago. Then Dave asked his wife, Kathy, to come to the seminar, and she was very, very skeptical. In fact, at all of our seminars, we give out evaluation forms. And what Kathy said on the evaluation form just continues to make me laugh, because she said, almost an exact quote here is, "I came to this seminar just to justify my no answer to my husband about this whole idea of real estate investing. But you had me by the break."
That's Kathy.
Kind of like Jerry Maguire, you had me at hello. And that's just a great story. And then Dave recently got his real estate broker's license and came to work with us here at Platinum Properties Investor Network. And we're glad to have him on board. But Dave, you know, tell us a little bit about why you started investing in real estate now rather than doing it several years ago, which most people wish they would have started sooner, but maybe you can address that a little bit.
Sure. Actually, we did try investing in real estate back in about 1989, 1990 timeframe. We lived up in Washington State, and then circumstances brought us back down to California, and we kept our home in Washington. And it was just a matter of timing where we bought at the high and then wound up having to sell at the low.
That's not a good strategy. We don't like that strategy. We don't recommend that strategy here. But okay.
But looking back, if we were able to hang on to that house, we would have made out like bandits today. So, again, it was just a matter of timing.
That's always the thing with real estate. Staying power is the name of the game. The people that stay in the game always seem to win over time.
Sure.
And one of the things is, of course, you know, we teach at the seminars and in the podcast is the real estate must make sense the day you buy it, so that you can afford to stay in the game. And it must make sense from a cash flow perspective. Okay, what else?
Well, you know, one of my business goals in investing is to remain happily married. So I decided to keep my wife on board. And as you mentioned, she came to one of the seminars, and she had done quite a bit of research on her own by, reading Robert Kiyosaki's books and so on. And so the seminar for her just tied everything together, and that helped quite a bit. I also wanted to address professionals in my similar circumstance and age group, people that have been in high tech or selling and so on. You know, you realize that sooner or later, just your paycheck and investing in your 401k is not going to carry you to the retirement that you desire. And just like Kathy, I read a lot of books by Robert Kiyosaki, and we saw Rich Dad on PBS. And so all those things together just brought us to the point that we're at today as far as investors.
Excellent. Why do you prefer real estate, Dave, over other investments out there? You work for a large publicly traded company, and of course, I'm sure you're buying stock, and probably you have a deal with your pension plan there and so forth. And you've been around and looked at other investments and done other investments. What's so special about real estate for you?
What's special to me is this particular case, it's proven. I'm not the first one in. I'm not doing all the heavy lifting. I'm not having to figure things out by myself. There's other people I can ask questions and associate with and see what to do and how to go about doing it. The other thing is it's very easy to understand. One of your other guests is Joel that helped develop Property Tracker, and he kids that you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand accounting for your properties. I would add to that and say you don't have to have an advanced degree in business in order to understand investing. As a matter of fact, my kids, I have two kids, Dean and Caitlin, And they go over the performance sheets for our properties and help us select what we're going to invest in. So they get it.
So when you're looking at the reports that our software creates for you, those first-year evaluations and projections on the properties, they actually help you pick properties. And what are they, 10 and 15?
Yeah, they are 10 to 15. So they'll look at return on investment and all the different categories and say, this is a good property.
What an excellent education at such a young age. To bring your kids into this, they can get involved. It's simple enough. And that's what's great about it. I find that the Wall Street world, they sort of make things sound so complicated. They've got so many terms and phrases, and keep it simple. Real estate investing is a relatively simple thing. Sometimes people kind of view themselves, and I've noticed this, you probably have too. They come to the seminars, they call us, and they sort of view themselves as kind of too sophisticated for real estate investing.
Mm-hmm.
They want to do complicated things as though they're better. But sometimes the simplest things really are the best. They're the most tried and true, and real estate is so historically proven.
Sure. And when I compare that to other investments, I mean, we all need to have short, medium, and long-term goals. But when I look at things like stock, whether it's the company that I work for or other publicly traded companies, it just seems like there's forces outside my control that make the stock go up or down. So real estate's just a lot more predictable.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sometimes in the seminars, I'll ask people, how many of you work for a publicly traded company? And of course, 30% of the hands in the room go up probably. And I say, have you ever noticed that the stock in your company goes up and down, and you work at that company every single day, and the ups and downs in your stock have nothing to do with the intrinsic value or the actual goings-on in the business? And they know that because they work there, right?
That's right.
But you're just subject to the whims of this speculative market out there of zillions of investors all over the planet that are playing all sorts of games, making everything so out of control for the actual investor. I love the fact that it's very difficult for them to manipulate real estate like that.
Another thing that's very important to me is Platinum's complete solution. I've spoken with other investment organizations where they'll sell books and tapes, or for thousands of dollars they'll provide consulting. And when I came to Platinum, they have already built out a complete network in several states of real estate agents, financing, just about anything that you can think of, and it's all ready to go. And they guide you through the process and stick with you after you've closed escrow. So that was incredibly important to me.
Good. What was your big aha moment about real estate investing, Dave? What sort of really brought you to the edge where you jumped in and did it?
Well, for anybody that's lived in California for any length of time, I've lived here my whole life, I look back at a couple of different instances. One is my parents bought a house in Tustin back in 1972. It cost $32,500, and at the time, that was all the money in the world. Their house payment was $318 a month. That house today, you can look it up on Zillow.com, is worth over $700,000. Nobody's done a room addition, a second story, even remodeled a kitchen, and you just look at that as an instance of what's going to happen and compare it to today and 30 years from now. That was one aha moment. And then, of course, my own experience with our house in Irvine, we bought it for just a little bit over $200,000, and that house is worth close to $800,000 today.
Isn't that amazing? And one of the things, too, Dave, that is, I think, more influential in terms of seeing upward price progressions in the future, of course, this, I always want to say, if you haven't listened to the old podcast, you didn't hear me say this before, this doesn't apply to all markets, because there are many markets around the U.S. that are really declining in value now. And that's why we're area agnostic, number one. And number two, we diversify. And number three, of course, we select what we think will be the best markets for the future. But the population is growing faster and faster. It's like exponential growth. So for your parents' property in Tustin, your property in Irvine, you saw those go up, which is terrific. But I think we're going to even see a lot more pressure on prices in the future because of accelerating population increases, number one. But number two, the growing middle class outside of the United States that are consuming all of those building materials. And obviously, we've talked about that on other podcasts, too.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, good. All right, Dave Toombs, welcome to the Platinum team. And thanks so much for being on the podcast today and sharing some of your insights.
Thanks very much, Jason.
This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media at HartmanMedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.